Welcome to Family by Design, a weekly radio program brought to you by Wellspring Christian Family Schools, the education ministry of WCF Church, located in Sebillesville, Maryland. We hope that today, in some way, we will help you to treasure God's design for your family.
Because the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.
Hello and welcome to Family by Design. I'm Joel Fisher and so glad that you've tuned in today. I'm joined once again in the studio with pastor and educator Gary Cox.
Hello, glad to be here.
It's good to be back, Gary, to continue a really important conversation we've been having. We've been chasing foxes, haven't we?
Yes,
and
little foxes.
And little foxes, and boy, they're hard to catch. But We're using that illustration from the scripture from the Book of Song of Solomon to talk about just basically dealing with issues when they are small and not big, meaning small that they come up in the course of everyday life in your home. One of the difficulties we have as Christians is sometimes seeing not being able to see the forest for the trees. Or maybe we don't see the tree in front of us because of we're too busy looking at the forest, I guess. And we live in a really turbulent time, a really concerning time in terms of just the big picture as far as policies and the legal landscape, cultural issues. We see things that give us hope from time to time, and we're encouraged by that. But we also realize there's a really, really dearth of understanding. And a lot of darkness that people are now lost in. We have a lot of people that don't have the light, and we're trying to figure out how we navigate all this with our family. So the last couple of broadcasts, we've talked about getting this back to an understanding of human nature, of understanding what's wrong with our kids anyway. And, you know, the fact of the matter is the same thing that's wrong with them is the same thing that's wrong with us without the redeeming work of Jesus in our lives, without understanding that we need to agree with God about how he's made us and our need to be redeemed and to give him glory and thanks for what he's doing in our lives, we are prone to go all kinds of directions. So today we're going to pivot a little bit here and kind of make the assumption that you have a foundation in place now, that you want to disciple your children, you want to help them understand these basic ideas, and you yourself want to be able to continue to have the ability to live out your walk, your faith with God, and by doing so, walking with your family in that nurture and admonition of the Lord. And we are seeing more and more in our culture the difficulty of doing that. I'll just share a small anecdote from real recently. I was aware of a teacher in Washington State who is a strong believer, a strong Christian, and she has served as a teacher for many, many years. And recently, she was called into a meeting with her superiors, and she had been warned before this meeting that, you know, she better have representative there to you know, because there may be going to be some issues involved. And anyway, bottom line is she went to this meeting and basically was warned that because she had chosen not to conform or comply with a student, a student's request that she call her by a particular name or by the student's pronouns that they wanted to have her use, that she was at risk for becoming in trouble and actually endangering the district in legal trouble. And so she was warned, by the way, by superiors who themselves actually professed to be Christians, that she needed to watch what she was doing. Now this particular teacher was strong in her own faith and convictions enough to say, you know what, I have a certain way that I can, I have a certain amount that I can maybe accommodate some of those things, but I can tell you what, I'm not going to be able to call this student something that she's not. And so that's just that's unfortunately a really common occurrence now. And the bottom line is that we don't just have, you know, teachers in public schools that have to deal with this. We're now having to work with, we mentioned at the beginning of the series, we have this amendment now in Maryland, right, that's provided, you know, a backdrop where basically any parent now is potentially at risk of being accused of harming their children because they will not, allow a child to continue in confusion when it comes right to their gender or these things. So,
and having their parental rights right terminated. That's actually already happening.
So we have a tension in society for the Christian that isn't going away, and no matter who's president or whether, you know, things change, of trying to live out Christian conviction, trying to follow conscience before God, whether it's in our own personal life or whether it's in discipling our children, where we're going to bump up against the force of authority asking us or even demanding us or penalizing us for not doing what is supposed to be said or done. So today we're going to kind of explore, well, what does that mean for the Christian? Is it possible to live peaceably in a way that honors God and that conscience while also abiding by the authority that we have in our life, because that's not going away. And I'm going to read something that you've said recently that just I really like it. I want you to unpack it. You said that the humble assertion of the Christian conscience is the most formidable influence on society. What does that mean? What do you mean by that?
Well, first of all, I mean historically, if you examine what we used to call Western civilization, the history of man, what you'll see is the impact of Christianity on the world, and that impact has largely been through martyrdom, persecution, because believers are more afraid of God than they are afraid of the state. I mean, Jesus put it very simply, don't be afraid of him that can kill the body. Here's who you fear. Fear him who, after your body's dead, can send you to hell. So there's a huge paradigm shift. And so, yeah, the government has the ability to take our lives if we don't please them, but God is who we owe the ultimate devotion to. So when I say the humble assertion, of course, I'm meaning that we live out our life and we give an answer for our conscience with humility. That comes from 1 Peter 3, I think it's 16. But anyway, it's a simple declaration, but it's so impressionable. I mean, the most major changes in cultural history has come because of Christians. You know, we're coming up on, or we're just past, I guess, by now, Thanksgiving. But Thanksgiving is a holiday that we celebrate the founding of our country through that incredible work of the pilgrims who, for conscience sake, came over to a desolate land and cut a little toehold for Christ. And that community, that group, eventually influenced our culture in such a huge way, so that some people even refer to us as a Christian nation. We are a strongly Christian influenced nation, but because there's no such thing as a Christian nation until Jesus is sitting on his throne, we're still a Gentile nation with tremendous impact. So this conscience of Christians has so impacted our culture that there is a great sensitivity in our culture to the practices of Christians and to the liberties, to give Christians those liberties to practice their faith. And today we have that same opportunity, even as you mentioned that teacher in Washington holding to her conscience and having an impact, even encouraging the principal in some ways with the right understanding. So, yep, What we believe and do is more influential than what we say.
I like you bringing up the pilgrims because I would definitely say, well, I don't know. Sometimes you have to say the obvious, but they much more extreme situation for them. They were living in a place where they had no religious liberty. They were, in fact, I think it was, I don't remember which of the Pilgrim Fathers used the term, they were harried out of the land. they did not have the permission to meet and to do these different things. And there were other people who held similar views in terms of their Christian identity that chose a different path. They chose to become more involved politically, as it were, and actually get some measure of power. The Puritans ended up actually coming to quite a bit of influence and power in England later on, and eventually there would be a civil war between the Parliamentarians, which were strongly influenced by the Puritans, and the Royalists. And you know, the interesting thing, there are a lot of good things to be said about that, but also some observations that the legacy of the Pilgrims has continued far much longer and in much more impactful ways, because they sought a peaceable, creative way for accommodation to continue to live out their faith, which was not an easy thing to do. They had to leave their homeland multiple occasions in order to do it, and eventually, of course, came to New England. So, you know, is part of what we're exploring here is that it, in some ways this is not a natural thought to especially modern day Americans that, oh, what do you mean be creative, seek accommodation? I'm used to Burger King, have it my way, you know. You don't, if you accommodate me, it means you're going to do exactly what I want you to do. So what, you know, what does this actually look like? Because, you know, wondering how this ties into this idea too of Jesus saying you got to render to Caesar the things that are Caesar's and to God the things that are God's. So what does that practically look like as we're, you know, we're in 2024 dealing with these crazy things where people are saying, oh, you got to let your kids do this and that, and, you know, blah blah blah. How do we proceed with,
well,
with,
well, I think things? The state we're in right now is an amazing thing because our consciences are being snuffed out. In 2017, when the Board of Education began formulating rules for how schools, public schools, are to deal with children with transgender issues and the like, they wrote a, it's probably one of the most well-written pieces of regulation I've ever seen. The words were so well-crafted. And everything basically said everybody has a right to be themselves in some way or other. But as the regulation wound down to its end, there was this little subtle conclusion, and that is, but there are some people who have had their rights squelched for longer than others, and so we are going to promote and preserve their rights ahead of the rights of others. And so they were trying to say we have diversity, equity, and inclusion in our schools. But what they were actually doing is they're saying there's one group above all, and we're going to honor and respect them. We're going to go to great lengths. So everyone else has to mute, has to change down. So when that teacher in Washington State simply said, my conscience won't allow me to lie to this student and call them by pronouns that aren't true. So there's the tension. So our conscience means I understand something. I have a foundation for understanding. When you don't have the understanding coming from God, you're missing that point. And so you're going to be open to this kind of confusion. And it's just going to get worse and worse. But when you have a biblical foundation, you understand God's God, I'm me, his word is plain, I worship and honor him for who he is, and I serve him because he's God and I love him, and I thank him for who I am and what I am. So in this picture of conscience, we, the most impactful thing is that I'm taking my conscience and my life and I'm practicing it and you don't have anything to say about whether I do this or not. You can't make a law that says to me, well, you need to honor and respect. I mean, basically, civil rights has gotten to the point in these issues where the culture is demanding that we not only accept or acknowledge or allow people that are different from us, but we need to honor and promote and actually, you know, make them feel like we accept them for who they are. And so that's the outline of the battle. And yes, we love the sinner, but we hate the sin. And this conscience issue is where I avoid, I hate what's wicked, I hate what's sin, and I cling to that which is good. And so I understand, I know what good and evil is, and I understand where it comes from, and I don't ever change just to please somebody else. When Jesus came, he told the woman caught in adultery, I forgive you, go and sin no more. So the real deal is that the person that has the problem needs conversion, needs their understanding changed by the understanding of the mind of God. But once you have that, you're so full of life because of the Holy Spirit living in you, because his word means something, it's a guidance, it's clarity. So there's a delight and you're not afraid. But at the same time, this whole issue of humility, I know how to come in and respect the turf I'm in, respecting the people I'm talking to, and state the obvious in a kind and courteous way, and just firmly. It's like the three guys getting ready to be thrown into the fiery furnace, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They said, he said, you got to bow down. He says, oh, king, we don't need any time to answer you. First of all, our God is able to deliver us, number one. Number two, even if he doesn't, we're not going to bow down to you. And that's so incensed to me. He did the furnace seven times hotter. The guards throwing them in died. And there they are walking around. Only thing that burned on them was the ropes that they had them tied in. And the clothes didn't even have the smell of smoke when they came out. But then the fourth person was walking in there. Who's that fourth person? Well, it said, like unto the Son of Man. Well, I'm sure that's Jesus in there with them. And that, but when they came out, Nebuchadnezzar comes and says, come out. And he talks to him and says, man, you guys have changed the word of the king. And he made a rule that, okay, everybody's going to honor this God because there's no God like that in all the earth. And so that kind of influence, that's the kind of influence that Christians have. We don't have to have the government on our side, but we can speak truth to power through our conscience.
Something you said earlier, that our consciences are being snuffed out, I guess I would say, well, that's only partially true, because actually the only person who can really snuff out a conscience is you. or if you never had a conscience in the first place, or if you've never thoughtfully considered what you actually believe or what you're willing to actually do. And I think that's a big part of where we're at, especially as believers in our society today, is you need to start being thoughtful, right, and actually start developing your conscience. What do you really believe about a particular issue, and just how far are you willing to go, so that when the time of testing comes, you can say, like the Hebrew men did in the fiery furnace, we don't have to think about this. we know where we're at, and you know what, King Nebuchadnezzar, even if you choose to throw us in the fiery furnace, mm-hmm, and God doesn't deliver us, we're still not changing our minds.
Yeah.
I wanna maybe change a little bit to the question, because there's an interesting element here, especially with the big picture that we're dealing with here in Maryland. And I know this is something that you and your wife thought about when you first started homeschooling, because it wasn't, mm-hmm, legal when you first started, right, homeschooling, or at least there wasn't a framework like there is, of course, now. But go ahead and develop, what does this look like when you have a conscience towards God to do something, or you know, in the instance of the person we mentioned earlier, you know, to not do something. In that case, she was being asked to do something. When it comes to your children, you know, how does it change the game a little bit?
Well, that's a great question, because it really does impact you when you're thinking of your children. Because at the time we started homeschooling, my wife and I, it was 1983. Well, actually, we began in 82, and we got an organization formed in 83. But at that time, we were aware of persecution in foreign countries like the communist Russia, Soviet Union. And we heard all these stories about the children from Christian parents would be taken from their home because they were taught the gospel at home. I mean, they were forced to go to school. Nobody had any school choice. But parents continuously lost their rights to their children. So when my wife and I began homeschooling, we didn't homeschool because we saw something really bad going on in culture. And that's probably one of the weaknesses of our discussion right now, is that that can't be the only thing. You have to have this vision. God's designed for the family. You have to treasure it. And we saw that the home was such a precious place in God's eyes, and we wanted to give our children as much of our home that we could. And so through the process of discussion, we realized, well, Jesus was homeschooled, and we're going to homeschool our kids. That's a short version. But in that process, we were very thoughtful. And we asked the question, well, at what point are we going to do something that has the risk of state coming in and taking our kids from us? So we were really thoughtful in that process. So in that process of being thoughtful, we understood what we wanted to do from Scripture. But then we did a little exploration. And this is where I just give God glory, because way back 100 years prior, nearly, godly men and women across the country had resisted by their conscience education laws that were oppressive. And we ended up with some good Supreme Court decisions creating a division. And that division resulted in the fact that Maryland law is one of many, many states that basically said public school is required for everybody except if you're in an approved school, a non-public school that's approved. And then there's one more exception. Unless you're in a school operated by a church organization. So a church-operated school in Maryland was a place that was exempt from the public school rules. So as we did our exploration and thoughtfulness of it, we decided, well, we're going to go that route. And we got some legal, advice, and asking, you know, what's the best way? And that's part of the thoughtfulness. And we ended up being creative. And what the attorney said was, listen, I understand your conscience, but you need to understand that just your narrative that parents are, by God's design, the first instructors of their children and ought to be allowed to teach their kids at home all the way through, it's going to be hard to sit in front of a judge and have him understand that. And yeah, all the law's on your side, but it sounds strange. It sounds very different. So he advised us, he said, what you really want to do is when you talk about home instruction, you want to talk about it in such a way that it is done in terms of educational understanding, that everybody's going to get the message. They're going to understand what you're doing. So we got really creative. We organized our school. We organized a school in our church according to Maryland law. We used the guidelines from non-public schools as the background for developing what we did. And the consequence was we began teaching because we could. We notified the state board as we were required, and we became engaged. And it was a battle. It was a several-year battle. But the process of that engagement was such that, you know, I couldn't believe it. I mean, God just, you have to always give God credit for the breakthroughs. But we just had an unexpected breakthrough through the legislature and through the State Department of Education. And just like that, overnight, they changed and they worked with us, and they ended up using that thoughtful structure, the creative structure that I drew up. Here's how you homeschool as a school. And they ended up using our basic plan, a very skeleton of it, not the full blown. And they created the regulation for homeschooling in Maryland around it because it made sense. And so it was a good lesson for me to learn. There was a formidable impact in Maryland because of my wife's and my conscience, but we weren't haughty. We were humble. We were thoughtful, very thoughtful. And we were courageous. We said, okay, we believe that we're within the full right and venue of Maryland law. And so our sense of our children being taken away, I mean, we had to answer the question first, what are you willing to let the state take your children from? So we had that clearly worked out. But in the process, we realized, well, the state doesn't have that right, except in these kind of situations. So we were courageous and took the risk. And then we got creative. And that's really what we're trying to drive at, even today. The parental responsibility, you don't have to reinvent the will, but you do have to take responsibility to have a conscience. What is your conscience? You have to value your kids. This is your heritage. How are you going to raise them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord? And then be thoughtful about the situation and the places that you're in, and take advantage of the opportunities to be creative and do something that's different for them.
Well, thank you, Gary. And we're going to have to actually stop there. But that's a great segue for our last conversation that we're going to have next time, as we specifically zero in on the education landscape and how Christians can live out their conscience before God in that venue. If you'd like to hear previous parts of this series, you can do so by going to WTHU.org and visiting the audio vault. You'll find Family by Design there and our previous broadcasts. And if you'd like to learn more about Wellspring Christian Family Schools, which is the sponsoring ministry for this program, you can do so by going to WCFS.edu. That's WCFS.edu. Until next time, I'm Joel Fisher, hoping that you can join us here next week on Family by Design as we continue to help you treasure God's design for your family.
Thanks for spending your time with us today here at Family by Design. Join us every Sunday when we will continue this wonderful journey helping you to treasure God's design for your family.
'Cause the greatest gift a father can give is a life lived for Jesus. And the greatest gift a mother can give is the knowledge of the Lord. Pass him on to your children. He's the gift that keeps on giving. The greatest gift is a life lived for Jesus.